It's another edition of the Falls Cast, brought to you by the Falls Free Press in Cuyahoga Falls. We're today, August 7th. It is early, it is bright, it is hot.
It is pretty.
It is beautiful.
And
love it.
We made it over the hump. We've done 50 episodes.
Woohoo!
This is 51.
Ooh. Look at us.
All right, we're professionals.
Area 51.
Whoa.
We are Alexless this week.
Oh, yay! God. I mean, boo.
So yeah. You have
cross
me
over for money,
slacker.
So you have me, Bart, as your moderator for the episode.
Yay!
And with me we have Mike and Suzanne Searle.
Hello. He put us together.
Ooh. Ooh. Hello, everybody. Still hate you, Alex.
And we have Steven and Jennifer Mulay.
Hello.
Howdy doodly doo.
On today's episode, we will have my interview with Danielle Sawat, owner and operator of Shelf Life Books on Front Street. She does give the hours of the store in the interview, but just a disclaimer, the store is currently closed for a couple weeks. But once it opens up, all that information will be correct.
It is an awesome place. I absolutely love that place. I mean, you can't beat a dollar a book.
No, you can't.
She's super friendly and very knowledgeable. Every time you walk in, she has a smile for you, you know, and talks to you. Love it. I love small bookstores, and it's just wonderful. I love going kind of down that hall, and you're like kind of going into like a little secret
basement
garden area to and find all these books. Love it.
Yeah, I still got credit over there. A friend of mine donated a bunch of books, and I got all the credit for them.
Nice.
And so now every time I go in, it's like, should I buy another one?
Do it.
Yes. The answer is always yes.
I can't wait for it to open back up.
Oh.
Yeah, me neither. And also, we do have new articles on the website currently. We are still doing those.
When you mean we, you mean you, right?
You mean all
of us. No. Not just me.
What?
I do have a movie review of Gunpowder Milkshake that was published last week.
Yeah.
But then our lovely bird nerd Amy Phillips just published a review of Midsummer's Night's Dream over at Stan Hewitt.
Oh.
Like literally this morning, just before we started recording.
Oh, I missed it. I have to go and look. All right. Very nice.
And then she also has another review coming to me soon.
Little side note there, or not a side note, a little digression. Does she have any info about the funky disease or virus or whatever was going around with the grackles and birds and stuff? Okay, I was just curious.
She's more of a bird nerd.
Okay. And if she heard more in her channels than we have.
And as we do every week, we encourage our readers and listeners to shop local. I, for one, have definitely been checking out Farmers Rail. They've gotten a lot more options.
Delicious.
And their sweet potato fries are heavenly.
Oh. Uh-oh.
Oh, Suzanne. Wait, what?
Yeah, they're like waffle style.
Yeah, they're really good.
But they have this like cinnamon maple dip that goes with them.
Oh, hell no.
Oh, I can't eat that.
Yes,
but tell
can.
Me more about it. Tell me more about it. It's so good, isn't it?
I will eat it for you.
I've had a burger there, and I've had a Cuban, and they're both were excellent.
Oh.
I had a Cuban.
Mm-hmm. That sounds good.
Gabe had a steak sandwich. That would look pretty good, too.
Yeah, like a Philly.
Yeah.
It was all good.
I keep wanting to try that.
We also bought some of their steaks, and we grilled them out. They were pretty freaking tasty. They had a special one time, like 2 day only, where it was half off all the frozen meats, and they had so we just grabbed a couple steaks, and it was 50% off. Couldn't beat that.
Yeah.
No. Then the quality that they have there is just insane. You know, even their cheaper quote unquote bad cuts are still they blow anything away from the grocery store that I've seen. So.
Yeah, the prices are a little high, but when the fact that you're shopping local,
you're shopping local and you're paying for the quality.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like I said, you know, Suzanne and I went to a high end steakhouse, you know, for a work function or whatever. And we were paying, you know, my filet was $40-some just for the filet, nothing else. Yeah. And I'm like, you know, you're paying 35 or 37 a pound for a filet there. And I'm getting almost twice as much, you know, for the same price. And I'd rather cook it at home.
It's better. Know? He cooks a mean steak, man. It's good.
Anybody else patronize any cool place in the falls this past month?
Past week we went to the Crafty Mart and stopped by at Ohio Brewing for some dinner. It was very good. The last time we went about a month ago, they were undergoing a kitchen change and it was really sad, but they really excelled. I had like a pulled pork with coleslaw, a sandwich and fries, and it was really tasty.
I had a Reuben and onion rings, and the Reuben was excellent. And the meat was definitely much better quality than normally I get on a local Reuben at a restaurant. We went like a month or two ago, and it was, I mean, their chef had quit, or in their the kitchen was terrible.
Yeah, they were undergoing transition.
And then this time, it was excellent. The food was very good, and the service was quick, and service was attentive, even though they were busy. And we had guest beers, guest taps, and they were all tasty.
Yeah, and after that, we went to Pav's and had some ice creamy cocktails. Goodness.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was good. It was very tasty.
And we also had Saffron Patch. And then, but if you're talking about over a month, I don't even have that list that long.
It has been a few weeks since we've been. We went to Looking Glass and checked that place out. It's really cool. I mean, a lot of like local artists, you know, put their stuff in there. They have stained glass in there and just a whole bunch of stuff. I mean, I found the stained glass that I really wanted. So
yeah, it's a nice window panel.
It was so nice. So yeah, it's a really cool vibe in there. So, and it's an old bank where they have a one of the vaults. I think they're going to set the vault up for use. I'm not exactly sure what they're going to do with it, but it's a pretty cool place. If you haven't checked it out, I would recommend going and looking there. It's on 2140 Front Street. The owners are really cool. I mean, husband and wife team that own it, and they have some really cool
Falls
pieces
graduates.
There. Cuyahoga Falls graduates.
2003, I think.
I think that's what he said. Yeah. So
I need to get a hold of him, and
you do need to get a hold of him.
An article or get him on the show.
Oh, I think maybe both. I don't know. He said that he would do both, and he seemed really cool and people right up our alley. So
awesome.
Yeah.
And speaking of getting on the show, as always, we'd love to hear your article and interview ideas. If you'd like to collaborate with us or just want to see us interview someone specific, just drop us a line at fallsfreepress@gmail.com or via our Facebook page. If you don't, I'm going to be continuously haunted by "Sorry, Bart" until I die.
Sorry, Bart.
Sorry, Bart.
Sorry, Bart.
And
I'm not sorry.
And please keep sending your feedback. Tell us what you think of the show. You can email us at or review us on whatever podcast catcher you use, whether it be Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google. I believe we're on Amazon now.
Oh, we're on Amazon. Really? We've made it, man. We have made it.
Stitcher?
Yep, even Stitcher.
Wow.
How many views did we get on the 50th episode, do you know?
You know what? I haven't checked.
Yeah.
No. I need Apple Podcasts analytics has been really off lately. Like, it's really hard to get into it. So,
well, it's Apple. So,
yeah,
you know
exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, talking smack about Apple. I just got a new iPhone, people.
Which one did you get? I saw your post.
I got the 12 Pro.
Ooh.
Okay.
I'm sorry that you got an iPhone.
Whatever.
I'm sure you can use it very easily.
I can. I went from an Android to an iPhone because I don't fiddle with phones or anything like that. Unlike Mike, who loves to be able to fiddle, and I just want it to work. And it works well.
Awesome.
Tinker. Tinker, tinker, tinker.
And finally, please get vaccinated and apparently now continue to wear a mask.
Yeah.
Yes.
Wear your mask. New Delta variant is the variant of concern here in Ohio, and you know, there's a lot more viral load in it. So you're going to have a lot more in your body. And even vaccinated people are now carriers. And there's some small breakthrough numbers, you know, 1-2% of people who've been vaccinated are reporting getting infected with COVID now. Of course, having mild symptoms and 99.95% of the people in hospitals are unvaccinated, but you can spread it even when you have been vaccinated. So masking up is a good way to
protect others.
Protect others, absolutely.
As it always has been.
And we want to make sure that we're not mutating it again, right? I mean, isn't that the fear that it keeps...
Right.
If we keep the spread, it's going to mutate and it might.
Yes.
The faster it
keeps passing out around everyone, the higher the chances this little virus is going to, you know, zig and zag and evade all of our tools. So the whole point is smacking it down as fast as we can. That means socially distancing as much as you can, masking up, getting vaccinated.
So we could, I mean, potentially, since we're all vaccinated here, we could potentially be a carrier of COVID and not even know it, right? I mean, is that the fear? That since we have the vaccine, we might not have the, you know, severe symptoms. We might not know. Is that why we're wearing the mask and making sure that it doesn't mutate? Like if we just keep transferring it back and forth to everybody, is that?
That's right. The science is out there now that we are seeing people who are carrying COVID, people that have been vaccinated, and they don't present with any symptoms. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of been the status and the MO of the virus since the beginning. They were, you know, saying a lot of people were carrying it and they didn't know. But now vaccinated people are also proven to be carriers and are spreading it to folks who haven't been vaccinated yet.
And it's highly contagious, much more contagious than the last version.
Yeah. So now the new thing is it's as contagious as measles. So that's like the highest level.
Chickenpox.
Oh, chickenpox. Wow.
Yes. And measles.
And measles.
Okay.
I have heard some inside reporting about that. So,
I mean, a lot of people don't have experience with measles, but many people have experience with chickenpox, and everyone knows how contagious that is.
I've had it. I had the measles and I had the chickenpox twice.
Yeah. I know we've had some measles outbreaks in the last decade because of anti-vaxxing, and it's just spreads like crazy.
Well, the vaccine, I mean, when during my, you know, back when the dinosaurs roamed the world, you know, Earth, they gave us, I guess, the vaccine too early and they didn't give us the booster. So there was an outbreak of measles in my area. And I unfortunately was the only documented case to have measles in my hometown.
Oh.
And so they decided to do boosters for everybody. And that's why you're getting the second shot. I mean, science, when they learn, they, you know, evolve and they, you know, that's why these things are changing so rapidly is because it's such a new virus and they're learning new things and, you know, trying to make sense of what this virus is doing, right? I mean, it's a live thing that's moving and learning us and figuring things out and trying to take us down. So,
yeah, that's how evolution works. You know, viruses have been around for a long time. So that's what they're good at. It's their job to infect. And, you know, they're tricky and they're going to find ways to beat us. So, our scientists are good, but you know.
Well, props to all the scientists and the healthcare workers who are just staying on top of this. You know, it is frustrating to have our information change constantly, but they're learning. They're figuring out what's happening. They're trying to keep us safe. So even though it's frustrating, we still need to listen to our healthcare providers and our scientists. And you know, wear a mask now when you're in public and you can't, you know, social distance and. For gosh sake, get vaccinated. Get vaccinated. I was vaccinated, one of the first ones to vaccinate, and I have not grown anything weird on me. I'm not being tracked. I mean, it seems to be working fine. So that I know of. I mean, it's good.
You're being tracked, just not by something in a vaccine.
Yeah, by that iPhone in your pocket.
Well, I'm carrying my new iPhone 12 Pro. I'm being tracked. Mm-hmm. Yes. So, yes.
Be smart, be healthy, people.
Yes. Thank you for the information, Jen. I appreciate it because it is confusing. And, you know, I myself am not an expert, so.
Well, it's a brand new virus, right? We've only had it around for a year and a half and it's doing new things. And, you know, we just have to be patient and trust our scientists that they're doing all the heavy lifting on our behalf.
Yes.
And they're churning out as much as they learn to us as quickly as they can. I mean, we're seeing all these scientific papers that they're just releasing before it's been even peer reviewed, just so everyone can have the information. And it changes. And sometimes there are hiccups and they have to reevaluate. But just trust your scientists. We're not
trust
out
them.
To control the world. This isn't Pinky in the Brain here. Come on now.
Right. Talk to your primary physician. You know, don't go and talk to people on Facebook and social media and people like that. If you have any questions and if you should be vaccinated, go talk to your general physician and find out what they have to say.
YouTube is not a source.
YouTube Narf. Is not a source.
Yeah, YouTube. No, YouTube, Johnny, go away.
Dude, no legitimate scientist is going to go on YouTube and make a rant video about something. It's just not going to happen.
Right.
So we'll jump into our roundtable here, and we're going to start with an actual piece of arts news.
Ooh.
Oh, okay.
Woohoo! Yeah, arts!
The Cuyahoga Falls High School Marching Band celebrates 100 years of performing at sports games, parades, concerts. And for the English classes lucky enough to be in a classroom looking over the football field at lunchtime. I didn't know in high school that I would memorize Pretty Fly for a White Guy so well. The band added their famous drum cadence in the summer of 1971, which is now celebrating 50 years of being their signature feature during performances unique to Cuyahoga Falls High School. After jumping headfirst into practice after a year of COVID, the band will be performing with the Pride Alumni Band and marching bands from other Ohio schools on August 17th at the Preview of Bands show at Clifford Stadium. Any alumni who wish to participate can pre-register online at pridealumni.org or at the high school on Sunday the 15th, noon to 2, or Monday the 16th, 5 to 6, both of which are going to be followed by rehearsals for the show. So this is pretty awesome. 100 years.
I keep saying he wants to do that and never gets a chance to sign up for it.
Our two boys were both a marching band for 4 years of high school. So we have 6 years of experience going to all these band shows and going to almost most of the home games and at least several band shows every year. So we're very familiar with it. I've seen that show hundreds of times. I've photographed it hundreds of times. And I kind of miss it, actually.
It's a treat.
You're going to do it this year, right?
Yeah.
If the weather is good.
They're an amazingly well-rehearsed and usually very talented band. They're one of the best bands in the area, absolutely. Have been year after year.
Mm-hmm. Mike is a band nerd.
Yeah, I'm a band nerd. I was in it. I'm just I was a trumpet player.
Okay.
I was a trumpet player.
You were a good trumpet player.
And all that. And
have you done any of the alumni concerts?
I have. Awesome. It's been a long time since I've done it.
You still have the shirt?
No, I don't have the shirt. I still have my horn, but I don't have the shirt. I probably haven't played in 10 years, 15 years.
You pull it out every once in a while and try to do something. You can get up really high. It's pretty impressive. Yeah.
Mike blows.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, it was a good time.
Our oldest was tuba and sousaphone, and also tuba, in the concert band. And the youngest was clarinet.
Okay. Yeah, it was fun. One of these days I'll get back to doing it.
Yeah, you keep saying that every year.
I know. It's just one of those things where...
Come on, we've seen that person get wheeled down their freaking wheelchair that they're playing.
It sucks for me. It's like, I know what level I used to play at. And to just pick it up, and it's not like, the armature's not there, so it's not like I can just pick it up and get ready in 2 weeks. It takes months and months and months of prepping.
I think you'd be in good company. I think majority of the people that do that, they do it for fun, and they don't actually play every day anymore.
Yeah.
And that's part of the fun of it. And I know that Noah and Gabe are our kids used to, when they were in band, all the band kids used to make fun of all the older people. Well, they sound terrible. It's like, they haven't played in 25 years.
So.
I mean, some of the jokes, like, you'd come out and, when they do the Star Spangled Banner, when you're starting stuff and when they start the preview of band show, it's like, as the old guys, we'd come out there and you're sitting there and you mesh through the high schoolers or whatever, the actual band, and you're sitting there and there's like your buddies that you're in your squad and you're just sitting there going, holy shit, I'm too old for this. And they're all giggling and laughing and stuff. And you're trying to see if you can get them to break character and stuff. And it's funny, but I'm like, man, we are way too old for this shit. What the hell are we doing out here? Hey, you know, where's my walker at? You know, blah, 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 you know.
It does look like an amazing workout, too. You think about it. It's it's one thing to do it when you're like 16, 17, 18, but to do it at our age, I can't imagine.
Oh, yeah. And it's funny. It's like, you know, remembering how to do JW and all that stuff, or, you know, named after John Walk, you know, it's just doing that and just remembering that. It's, you know, it all just comes back to you real quick, though. You know, because that was the biggest thing, was everyone's like, well, you know, technically we're remembering, we're learning a new routine, a new program every week, you know, and you have like realistically like maybe 3-4 days to learn it and then perform it. But like all the music, I don't know how they do it now, but like way back when, you know, when the dinosaurs roamed, we had the whole entire, you know, songbook or, you know, playlist for the whole entire season. And you had to learn everything, memorize it, and test it out. So you had to memorize everything in about 3 weeks, you know. So, wow.
Yeah, they, pretty intense. And they work very, very hard to do that. They practice so much. Mm-hmm. Good. I remember when I asked it, I'm the one that had to drive them to practice every day.
Yeah.
And pick them up until they started driving.
Yeah.
And it was a lot. They were there for, they go there, what, every Thursday typically was practice day.
Yeah. Thursday, 6 to 9.
Yeah. And then plus every day during band, the band time that they would go to marching band.
You have sectionals, you do this, you do that. You know, it's like it was involved, you know. It was fun though. I mean, I miss it, you know.
Great program.
Mm-hmm. One of the best ones in the area. I'm going to rephrase that, the best one in the area.
Yeah.
Amen.
Yeah. They keep winning year after year, like some of the best in Summit County or Northeast Ohio all the time.
That's something we should be proud of.
Oh, I will admit, though, seeing them going from the swing style to more of a core style just kind of takes something away from it, you know?
Personal preference, I guess.
Yeah. That's just me. Yeah. So I'm kind of curious, though. I haven't seen an alumni performance since then. It's like there's a lot of us old timers who were the swing style, you know, and then like, you know, Gabe and, you know, it's like, okay, do Gabe and Noah, were they like the core style or were they like swing style? So were they swing?
I think
like, what's swing. The big difference between swing and
they're not a competition band. I know that. And I think they are more.
So they're still doing
swing. Yeah. I think Dustin Harris. Okay.
High knees and marching and
high knees. Lines, okay.
Different patterns.
I think they're primarily swing, but I think they blend a little bit into the other style a little bit, but I think they don't do band competitions. They don't do any of that stuff.
Yeah. Cause I remember the big thing, like the big thing when I was in was, you know, we had, I think, two bass drums. We didn't have tuned bass drums. They didn't have the quads, you know, none of that stuff. We didn't want that. And then like after I got out, you know, graduated, whatever, you know, it's like, then I started seeing it coming. I'm like, no, you know, and then
they do have all that, but the band's actually quite large. I mean, so I guess they have all this stuff because the band is huge.
How big are they? How big are they marching?
When they in 18, what were they? Were over 100, weren't they?
Yeah, it was like 120.
Yeah, we were 120. I think Noah was like 130. When our oldest son graduated at 16, they had 12 tubas.
Yeah, because we would march, I think, 120 or 130, but we always had like 15 or 20 in reserve. You know,
I don't think we had any reserves. We don't have any. I think everyone.
Oh, really?
Plays. Yeah.
Okay.
Mike found an old video of one of their games on YouTube and he showed it to me where he actually played, and it was pretty cool to watch. I mean, it was like really grainy and 90s, you know, that kind of like not good quality. But yeah, he was like, oh, there I am. And
that's awesome.
It was pretty cool to watch.
I was the high note guy.
You could hear it. And he's like, oh, you can hear how high you can go up. And it was pretty cool.
So from music to the school board. This past week was the deadline for candidates to run in the November 2nd election. For the 3 seats on the school board up for election this year, Anthony Gomez has filed for re-election, while board president Karen Schofield and member Kathy Moffitt have not, leaving their seats up for grabs.
Interesting.
Oh my. Karen isn't running again, huh?
Nope.
Wow, they're done. Maybe the pandemic cooked them.
Maybe.
Sad.
Yeah, I can't say I blame them, really.
Yeah, she was good. They're both good. Yeah. Oh, my.
That's a loss for us. Yeah, definitely.
A lot of experience right there.
Yep.
Alicia Coco, a levy committee member and former Richardson PTO president, also the organizer of the Legos of Love charity drive that collected Legos for every student in Cuyahoga Falls to play with during indoor recess during the pandemic, has filed to run, as has Carrie Schaefer and Betty Sprague.
Yeah, went to school with Carrie. She was in the band, too.
Yes, and her daughter, our boys were in the band with her daughter, yeah, and we just saw her at Crafty Mart.
I used to hang out with her at the band show. She's a very, very kind person. She's a good person.
She's good people.
She's
very active at the school, too. I mean, she goes to all the board meetings and stuff. I mean, it's...
We got to get her publicized out there.
Yeah, she's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I think she'll do well.
Meanwhile, our fearless leader, Alex, is also not running for re-election. His seat is being sought by AJ Harris and Douglas J. Kirchner.
AJ Harris. I mean, you can't. That's great. That's great. He'll hope to do awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yay, AJ. He's got our vote.
Yeah, absolutely.
And voters are going to also decide on November 2nd for another levy renewal.
Oh, boy.
But it's a renewal.
It's
a renewal.
People aren't going to see it that way.
No, they're going to want to punish all the people that voted for the new school.
We already paid that much, you know. Well, our taxes are going to go up more.
This is a renewal.
Yeah, not going up. Staying the same.
You're already paying.
Save the kids.
A group that illegally gained access to the Northeast Ohio Women's Center by deceiving staff, only to take a stand inside, calling the employees murderers and refusing to leave, has been officially charged with trespassing. They've been fined $250 plus court charges and 10 days in jail. However, all the fines but $100 were suspended, with an order that these individuals not commit something like this in the area again.
Oh, that will work.
Ridiculous. I did not hear about that new ruling. And
what's the new ruling?
Just that they've been officially charged and like all their court fees and shit were waived.
They did get 10 days in jail.
Okay.
Yeah,
whatever.
That's good.
Brought down the house and had their asses beat. You know, I may be a liberal, but sometimes I say fuck them.
Yeah, well, I'm glad they got 10 days in jail. That's good. Yeah. Did any of you guys read about this or see it in the news?
I didn't.
No, I haven't heard about. I mean, I'm sure it's probably in the news. What, this weekend?
Yeah.
Was it just happened? I don't know. This is a slap. I mean, to say, you know. Don't do it again.
Don't do it again.
That's basically what it was. It was basically a slap on the wrist.
Bad people. Now. Wink, wink, wink. Yeah. I mean, come on. This is just ridiculous.
Yeah. Hopefully it keeps them away. It did got a lot of publicity, and there was a lot of people against them for their tactics and their bad faith. So they did get blasted pretty good.
I mean, they're emotionally torturing the people that are in there for services. I mean, it's... Right. Yeah. It's just disgusting.
Yep, keep them in jail. Bye.
Well, even similar groups to them were just like, what are you guys doing? Really bad what you're doing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, because it's bad PR, and that's what they survive on.
Not even their supporters were like, hey, you went a step too far.
That's what I'm saying. It's bad PR that way. They don't.
They survive on PR and they got bad PR. Yes. Got it. Yeah. Agree.
So I'm glad something was done, but.
Yeah. Maybe a little
it
more.
It was a wink
time.
And a nod and just, you know, wag of the finger. And.
Well, 10 days in jail is nothing. It's not, you know, 3 days like for drunk driving and stuff, those initials. Yeah. But 10 is pretty, you know, that's a week and a half.
I get that. 10 days technically is just trespassing, but reducing the fine to $100. No, should have left it at the 250.
Yeah.
It just hammered all of them.
Well, it was threatening, too. It wasn't like they were just standing there and, you know, being silent. I mean, they were threatening them and, you know, calling them murderers. I mean, I would think that it should be a little bit more of a, more than just a trespassing charge. But, you know, what do I know? Not a whole lot, obviously. So,
Suzanne, did you have any good news this week?
Alex is not on the show. And that was per Mike. That was not
Yay.
Me.
I
enjoy Alex being on the show, but he said that was good news. I mean, you know, they have an interesting best friend relationship.
Do you?
A love-hate relationship?
He does this because it's almost like he's protecting himself emotionally because it's so devastating to him. So he kind of does it by humor. You know what I mean?
Gotcha.
Yeah.
It's getting kind of deep.
So Mike loves him so much that he loves him too much. So therefore, and outwardly, he projects.
Is that what it is?
Okay.
That is what it is. He puts kind of a shell on, like a hard shell. Yeah. And he wants to pretend he doesn't care. But he really cares a lot. Like, after we get done with this podcast,
I get it. I agree.
Yeah. I've always thought the more Mike makes fun of you, the more he likes you.
Yeah.
It's true. It's true. You know, pulling the pigtails or something. Yeah. You know what?
Is that what it is?
It's true. But no, I don't have any other good news. I mean, the festivals are back on, everybody. Woohoo!
Yeah.
You guys were there on Friday. How was it? Pretty cool.
It was very busy.
It was crowd. We got there early. And as the night progressed on, it got busier and busier and crowded, more crowded.
Yeah.
All the restaurants, all the patios were packed. There was 45 minutes to an hour and a half wait.
Yeah. Leo's was an hour and a half. Crave was 45 minutes. That's why we went to Ohio Brewing. They had outside seating away.
They sat us right away. Good. But they have a big space.
Mm-hmm. So it was good, busy. A lot of the all the artists and the makers they had, there was quite a diversity from leather workers, candle makers. What else did we see? Like knitted goods and tea dude was there. I got some tea.
Artwork. People that make tea purses.
Yeah, I'm drinking it right now. The turmeric chai turmeric. So very tasty, non-caffeinated tea. And there was a lot of people having honey. And it was good to see a lot of black owned small businesses there. So we were happy to support that. It was good. So yay. I guess it could be good news.
And actually not that much festival type food that I could see.
The food trucks and stuff was all, it wasn't like gyros and funnel cakes. It was good.
Yeah.
Nice.
Good stuff. Nice diversity. Very, very well run.
And there was this amazing band called Summit Sky with some amazing, amazing guitar player and singer on it.
I heard they suck. That's what Mike told me.
Banjoing and singing.
They definitely didn't suck.
No, they played a lot of original music. I dug it.
That is Alex's band. If anybody wants to know, that's where he plays. That's why we're making
he's
fun
in
of
a band.
Summit Sky.
Doesn't suck. They are very good. Everybody should check them out. But
and like we were saying before about the vaccines, hopefully we're able to have a lot more of these Friday night festivals coming up.
Yes, get your vaccine. Should we do the Bart's Art song?
I believe it is time.
Are you guys ready? Bart's Arts, Bart's Arts, Bart's Arts, Bart's Arts.
Bart's Arts.
Yeah, there we go.
There it is.
Well, speaking of the Friday night events, this coming week, the show comes out. On Friday, the headliner will be the Buck Naked Band, and their opener will be Madison Cummins, who is an excellent acoustic artist.
Should go check that out.
And then we discussed this on a previous show, but the Macauga Falls is the recipient of a $5,000 grant from the National Endowment for the Arts to fund a public art installation along the Macauga River. This will celebrate the river's history, and Stacy Levy, an environmental artist in Philadelphia, and Peter Jones, a Native American artist from Syracuse, will create the art for this project, with Akron's curated storefront serving as the project manager and hosting public meetings to get feedback.
That's just so awesome. Cool. Yeah, I can't wait to see it.
So, yeah, I think when we first talked about this, they had just applied for it. But they officially got it now.
Yay. It's going to be cool. Look at that. Cuyahoga Falls. Way to go.
Next, the third annual Children's Art Show at Upfront Art Space opened about a week ago, featuring work from students ages 1 to 17. Good news with this is if you bring in back-to-school items for Closet of Caring when you come to the show, you can get 15% off your purchase.
Oh, cool.
Oh, that's awesome.
Closet of Caring, too. That's awesome. Yeah.
Next Saturday at the Jenks Building for the curated art on Front Street, Akron poet and DJ Ace Epps will be performing a spoken word presentation. This is August 14th at 1 o'clock. And Ace Epps has done a lot of stuff, especially with the Downtown Arts Commission.
Oh, yeah?
Interesting time. 1 p.m. Yeah.
Well,
what day is that?
It's a Saturday.
Yeah, it is a Saturday.
But yeah, it, in the middle of the day, it is a bit weird.
Yeah. Well, if you're going out there and you're doing some shopping, you know, you want to check out, yeah.
Yeah,
and I have no doubt that on a Saturday, if the weather's nice, that
there'll be a lot of foot traffic.
But yes, a lot of foot traffic.
Mm-hmm. And finally, currently on display at the Cauga Valley Arts Center is their membership expedition.
What is that?
Those are two completely different words.
Oh, okay.
What's going on?
Yes, that was a zig and a zag. I'd like to see a combo.
The reception for this show, where the awards will be given out, will be this coming Friday, August 13th, between 5:30 and 7. So that's all for Bart's Arts.
Boo.
Oh, all right. So another good show of books.
Woo! Yeah. We want to thank our listeners for joining us this week. And also, according to Apple Podcast Analytics, it says we've only had 10 listens for episode 50.
What?
Mm. What?
But in the last 60 days, episode 49 has had 93 plays, and episode 48 has had 60.
Wow. Oh, what's going on? Come on, go listen to Apple on 50.
That should have been Apple. Come on now.
The two episodes that got the most plays in the last month, in the last 2 months, have featured Jerry Holland from the Historical Society and someone named Alex Hall about the 3-on-3 tournament.
That's kind of cool.
I'm surprised the mayor didn't get more listens. Maybe we should start pushing that more.
I'm kind of wondering if people watched the video instead.
That might have.
That's true.
Listen and watch the video. Do both.
Yes, do both.
Yeah. What else are you doing with your life? Come on.
If nothing else, just put it on the background.
We're in the background. Well, keep listening to it.
Did anybody check the YouTube and just see what kind of how many watches you got?
No.
I don't have login for that one, but that would be a good thing to check. I don't either.
How do we check
whatever.
That?
Go watch and go look.
It should say it, actually, how many they had.
Can you? Go look.
Do it.
Hopefully we don't cry.
It's totally off topic, and I just thought of something totally stupid. There's a new candle place coming in downtown. You make a candle thing. All we need is a bakery down there, because then you would have the butcher, the baker, and the candlestick maker.
Oh, no. Oh, Mike.
Bart, how are you going to decide what the B-roll is on this one? Because that would be a good show. Many good things.
We could have an interview, like a little mini interviews with all three of those businesses and title it The Butcher, the Baker, the Candlestick.
Yes. Be funny. I love it. Yeah. I like that idea. That's cute.
Yes.
And now I can't remember. Where was that from? It just popped in my head, and I don't remember where
Mother
that
Goose?
Was from.
Yeah.
Was that Mother Goose?
Mother Goose rhyme?
Yeah.
It's my 10 views on the video.
10.
Okay, people, go watch. Go with listen. What are you doing?
With two thumbs up.
All right, might have been me.
One of those might have been mine.
Probably Steve gave it a thumbs up.
I think I gave it a thumbs up. Wait a second. If I haven't, I'm going to go do it. Oh, no, people. Go give us thumbs up. Come on. Worked hard on that one. It was hot that day.
It was really hot.
So please go make it worth it and go watch it.
We want to thank our listeners for joining us this week, and we want to thank Danielle for speaking with us also, so stick around for my interview with her right after this, and remember, we want to hear your ideas for interviewees, ideas for articles, email them to us at falls3press@gmail.com, rate and review us on whatever podcasting you use, keep listening, you know, if you love us, bring those numbers up.
Yes, please.
Woo!
Yes, make it worth it, people.
Pump them up.
Pump it up. Pump it up.
We're here for you. Help me help you.
Help me help you. Show me the listening.
No, it's from Jerry Maguire, fool.
It is.
Damn.
You know what? If you do listen to this and you like it, tell your friends. Share us on Facebook. Share us on social media. Let other people know that we are out there. I mean, it's surprising to me anytime that I go out and we are trying new businesses or walking in, I'm always constantly talking about this and telling the business owners about it. And they were surprised that this is even available. So, and they like the idea. I think it's just that people need to know about it. So if you're listening to this right now, and even if you don't like us, please tell people about us.
We're going to have to pay.
If you don't like us, tell your enemies. If you do like us, tell your friends.
Yes. Love it.
Curse them. Curse them with a boring podcast.
So until next episode.
I'm going to get really sad if people don't go listen or watch the video. And so we might have to take the week off. And if you don't want that to happen, go look and watch the video and listen to our podcast.
Bye.
Later, alligator.
And this week, we're here with Danielle Sawat from Shelf Life Bookstore on Front Street.
Hey, good morning, Bart.
Good morning.
Me.
This is one of the rare occasions I'm recording an interview on a morning, so I'm already running into plenty of fun.
Well, are you a coffee drinker?
I am not.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm well equipped with caffeine.
I'm probably going to have to get some caffeine after this interview, though.
Okay. Well, if you nod off, I'll push some buttons.
So, Danielle, how did Shelf Life come about? This is the second recent bookstore on Front Street. And before that, we really, with the exception of Borders and Books A Million, there haven't been any bookstores in the Falls.
Right. Yeah. With the exception of Trust, which is in the Jenks building on also on Front Street, down the street across from the Sheraton. And now we have Books A Million, but I think that they're temporarily closing for a renovation and maybe a move. I've been hearing that. And I grew up in the Falls and I don't remember bookstores. And I don't know if that's because as a kid, I wasn't as inclined to visit bookstores because I was in school and there were plenty of books there. But yeah, so Shelf Life wasn't actually supposed to be a bookstore at all. The way it started is probably a lot different than most local bookstores. And it happened really rapidly. It unfolded extremely quick. I turned 40 in December and I purchased an estate library from Richfield, from what I wish I would have known the beautiful human that had all of these wonderful books. He had passed away probably a year and a half, 2 years ago, and his family was selling off his books and they ran an ad on Facebook Marketplace. And I purchased it at the end of November and took several trips back and forth to bring about 1,200 to 1,300 books to my house.
Wow.
And yeah, it was a little anxious because it was so many books and you're thinking like, why would I be doing this? And well, I'm having a midlife crisis or something like that. But so I brought all these books back and I kept a lot. I did keep several hundred books. They were in just such amazing condition, but a lot of them didn't interest me. And I kind of figured I'm going to die before I can read all of these. So why don't I pass them on? And I ran an ad on Facebook Marketplace and offered, a dollar a book, help me get these books out of my house. And I started meeting up with people. COVID was happening. And I also didn't, for privacy and security, I didn't really want people at my house. So I was meeting them at parks and just various parking lots. And they'd go back and they'd revisit the list. And then they'd, call or message me again and say, hey, there's a couple more books I saw on your list. I'd like to come and get them. And then I'd show up and they'd bring me books. And so they were asking me they were donating books to me and put it at the end of your list and see, maybe somebody else wants it. So as I kept adding books on, I was, adding more books to this list. And eventually I connected with a really great local supplier and I was getting so many like trade-ins and donations that we outgrew the house. So I rented a storage unit and that lasted a weekend until I realized that this isn't at capacity. So the space that I'm in now where Shelf Life is, that bookstore was actually meant to be storage. And my intention was to keep going with the lists where I was typing them out in these 9-page long Excel spreadsheets and just letting that email list grow and meeting people there. But the meetups, it sort of started to make some sense. Like, well, that's essentially a bookstore. If you're going to meet people here, why not also open it to the public? Because the response has been a dollar a book helps me keep reading. I can't afford, especially now, to have something full retail, which there's nothing wrong with full retail. But if you share the obsessive disorder that I have with owning a lot of books, you can't afford your habit.
No.
So it became a bookstore pretty quickly. And that's the long, short story of how Shelf Life began, when it wasn't even really something that wasn't the intention in the beginning, but then it was just a little too hard to step away from. People really like having affordable books, and they really like used books. They don't mind that they're used, and they want a physical book in front of them. And so then, you know, you just take it and run. This thing is sort of driving itself, to be honest.
That's good. That was one of my dreams early on, was always running a bookstore. And then, especially as a librarian myself, like, oh, you know, down the line, long into the future, I'm going to own a bookstore. And then it just got to the point where bookstores were beginning to seem obsolete. So yeah. The fact that there is a bookstore and people are shopping there,
yeah,
I feel is good news.
I've had I'm going to say this a lot because I've had so many of these conversations lately. I am overwhelmed with the fact that there are people still reading books in physical form, especially when we're stuck inside for a whole year and all we see, everything is, you know, streaming, everything is digital. You assume, especially when you can't have those close interactions with people, you assume that we're going digital, right? You think like Kindle is free, the book is $10, while everyone has an e-reader. I mean, e-readers are being given away like candy on Black Friday for years. So you think that everything is in digital format. Nobody is reading, you know, paper pages anymore. And that's not the case. People say the same thing every time they come in. I want the smell of a book. I want the touch of a book. I want the enrichment of holding the book in my hand, and I learn better when I'm holding a physical book. That still exists. So for anyone that has doubted, that is still very real. And if you feel like you kind of are lost in the digital age, know that there are people that still are refusing to let go of print work. It's overwhelmingly positive. And I think we don't know that still exists.
No. Well, I do think there is a large number of people that do, people like us. There is, I'm going to reveal something that I'm sure one of my coworkers will, you know, be embarrassed that I'm saying, but there's a lot of us at the library who enjoy the new book smell.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah,
and it's just something about, you know, picking up a book and leafing through it, you know. Yeah, sure, you can jump to the end of the book to spoil it for yourself on a Kindle just by pressing, you know, that last chapter button. But it's something about going to, you know, looking at the end of the book yourself.
Yeah, and you know, I think, and I've been thinking about this a lot and actually kind of want to do a little research, but I really do think that, like, how hand-eye coordination works and how touching things, tactile sensations as a child helps with memory. All of these different ways that we learn and retain information, I really believe that there is something to holding a book that has a connective tactile feeling to it. It has a smell. We know the smell. Like, we're entrained since we're kids. You know the smell of your school library. You'll know it till the day you die. It's probably going to be one of the last things you smell in memory. The smell of walking into your school library or a library or a bookstore. If you went into a bookstore when you were a kid, there is a smell, and you automatically start to associate it with the process of learning, or being creative, or even escapism, really getting lost in a story, a digital reader, while it has a lot of great qualities. And I do advocate for digital reading for certain things, but it doesn't provide that experience that we automatically attach to the way we feel when we read and what we're gaining from it. So I think that there is something really physiological that happens when we pick up a book that we'll never be able to get from reading on a backlit screen.
Well, and two, I think the Kindles, like, when it's easy to download 100 books, but yeah. I think it falls into the same issue as streaming, you pull it up, pick up the Kindle, just like you go to Netflix and think, what am I going to read?
Yeah.
And then you spend half an hour trying to figure out what you want to read, and you never read anything.
Yeah. Then that's right. You know, it's you could spend hours, and we have spent measurable portions of our life looking through streaming catalogs of what to watch next and what to read next. You could go into a library, eventually you're going to find something and you're going to be really solid with what you found, even if you wind up not liking it. Making the choice of something that's physically in front of you is a lot easier, I think. Even in my own personal library, which I will not reveal how many books there are, and there are people that have many more than me, but
after no shame.
Yeah. You know, like if I'm ready for a new book, I could sit down and go, gosh, this is really hard. But within 15 or 20 minutes, I'm settled in. And that's not the same if you're scrolling by, gosh, this looks good. What are the reviews on Goodreads? And some people, I can't speak for everyone, because I honestly don't do much digital reading unless it's for research or something that's out of print that I won't be able to find in print. So I don't have that problem, but I know that other people do also have, you fall into like the scrolling hole when you're looking for something to read.
You talked about how the store started as $1 a book.
Mm-hmm.
How has that business model kept going? I was going to say, it's a very ingenious business model, because you can get, basically you get cheap knowledge. You get the books for you know, it's financially savvy for buyers.
Right.
How has that helped with the store? I feel like you're not taking in a lot of money with some people who only buy a couple books at a time.
Right. And that's okay. I'm not a very good business person. that's not my forte. I tend to put a lot of stock in, you know, if your heart's in it, it'll work, and it'll work, at whatever capacity is necessary to keep it going. So that's kind of the range. Now to somebody that is really well scholared in business practice, I know exactly what you think, and it's okay that you think that, because it's probably true about me, but it does work in a sense that a low cost item that moves in volume. So if I move a lot of books very quickly, and they do move quickly because the people that I'm catering to read very quickly, they read a lot of books. Some of them keep books, and then eventually they go through cycles where, you know, they can't take in any more books, because sometimes a husband or a wife or a partner is like, no more books. And so what they'll end up doing is bring me the books that they are reluctant to part with, but eventually do, or, you know, they wait it out a little bit, and then they get another bookcase and they come back. So there's all of these different reading demographics that fit when we talk about moving books really quickly. It is low profit, and I do have to make a profit, and I step forward with both feet that I have to make a profit to exist, to be able to bring these books with the mission that I'm setting out for. So, you know, at $1 a book, you could scale that all, you know, up to retail price. It's the same. It would be the same for a major chain with all of their overhead. I don't have any employees. And I, in the space that I'm at, I reasonably so could not have employees. I don't think it would be a habitable place for an employee. You would not be happy very long. There's no sunshine down in the basement, but it is scalable. It's just, it's hard to imagine that it might be, you know, my take-home pay is irrelevant and probably non-existent for a while, but I can pay the bills. And as long as the demand is there, and I think that'll stay, especially with, you know, some of the programs that are happening and the networks that are growing around affordable reading and being a resource, not just to customers that walk in, but to organizations and small groups of people, large groups of people. There's a lot that's happening that's more than just it's a dollar bookstore, which it is, but it's a resource. So I don't know if that really directly answered the question, but
no, it did.
trying to do is paint the picture. And a lot of people ask me, how much is your rent? You know, are you actually able to afford this? I feel like I'm not paying you enough. Don't worry about any of that. And shelf life, you know, shelf life will go as long as it's supposed to go, you know, and I really do believe that. And I trust that it's a totally different kind of business, because I almost don't want to run it like a business model. I feel like this is more of a community bookstore, and that's kind of the direction that I see it going.
Well, and you said, I mean, shelf life existed before shelf life existed. You know, you had the store without an actual storefront before.
Yeah, for a couple of months, yes. Quickly, rapidly. But, you know, maybe what's interesting is that, and my friend messaged me the other day, she and I started book thrifting together probably close to 10 years ago. So you could say that maybe like shelf life has always existed for people that have purchased thrift books or books on thrift, because, you know, that was the way that I was able to afford, you know, my habit, my love for books, you know, my excessive feeling of having to preserve books. So maybe it's always existed, and it's not mine. You know, this idea of dollar books is, you know, we miss our library sales. We miss having Gaylords available, you know, at the front of bookstores, you know, that are unfortunately a dying breed. But I guess like it has always been there. It's just that now there's a storefront for it. But the idea, I don't think, is just mine.
No. Speaking of the bookstore itself, what kind of books do you have there other than used? Like, do you bring in a lot of different genres?
Yeah, absolutely. So the store is meant to cater to all interests. It's very small. So if you've been in there, you already know that it's really small. It's 360 square feet. So I cram in as much of a variety as I can, and I rotate pretty often. But there's sections on some of the things that are really important. Obviously, first and foremost, I do have a small children's section, which is piled up with young adult that gets mixed around a lot. I'm so sorry if you come in. There is no rhyme or reason. Kids pull stuff down and I can't rearrange it quick enough. But there is a huge bookcase of, huge might be an overstatement, but if you're a kid, it's huge. Young adults, children's books. And then I have also a growing nonfiction section, which includes quite a bit of history, our history, global history. I'm working on expanding biographies and memoirs. There is a really big mystery suspense thriller section. It takes up actually two bookcases, which of all the genres that I have, that's the biggest one. I do have sci-fi and fantasy, and then regular fiction as well. And then I like to bring in also books for people that might just like to like look books, coffee table books, but actually have some pretty dense information. So older like National Geographics, older music, entertainment. If you're an actor, I like looking at these books, even though I'm none of these things. I feel like they're really enriching. And when I see a kid pick up something like that, that's 50 or 60 years old, that just really kind of makes me swoon, because I feel like that's kind of our important history. So there is a section for those. And then local authors. I have a coffee table of local author books. So pretty much I'll shelve anything except, unfortunately, cookbooks, diet books. I have a small spiritual section, and I do have a sports section, which doesn't move, but I'm certain that someone is going to walk in with a passion for sports that I don't have and make me really happy that those books are going back out.
The second you get rid of those books, you're going to have somebody come in looking for them.
I know. That's why I'm holding on. And the thing with a lot of these sports books is they've never been, I don't know why, but they've never been open. They're in really great shape. And I just can't part with them. Someone will come in with a great story about watching football or baseball with their family when they were young and go, oh, I really liked this player, and I'm so glad you have this book. So they're there.
You get your books, again, like you said, from different places, people donating. How can people donate to the collection?
Pretty easily. And I will say this, for quick information, Shelf Life is on Facebook, and I have the automatic message section set up. So if you go to send me a message. It'll autofill with pre-filled questions. And one of them is about donating and trading. If you click it, there's a PDF that I update as needed, which gives you instructions on where to go, how to bring them in, how to get to me first if it's a lot. And I can't stress this enough for anybody that would like to bring it books in. There are stairs, and I never want somebody to do the physical work, especially if they're uncomfortable with it or they have any reason that that might be a risk. Come down and get me, and I'm equipped. I have a hand truck, and I do this a lot. So I kind of want to put that little safety thing. I don't want you coming down wheezing or in any pain because you brought these books down to me. My job is to come and get them from you. So I would be happy to do that. But I accept all donations with some exceptions that I'd already mentioned and some other things. And seasonally, there might be things that I can't take. Like right now, unfortunately, I'm not taking any older romance novels because I do have limited storage space and I'm having a hard time moving them. That's temporary. I'll come back with that later. But for right now, as other requests come in, there might be things that I would say, I unfortunately can't take, you know, these types of books right now. You could always message me and ask, but donations, pretty much you can bring them in. The only thing I ask is that the boxes that they come from are clean. Because it is such a small space, I can't take anything that may have any mildew or dust. And that really is also for the preservation of everyone that comes in. I also offer trades, and I love doing trades because it basically means that you're going to come back. So trades work. The standard trade is a quarter a book or 4-to-1 for anything that you bring in that I can resell. So when I do trades, I just ask that you hang around for a little bit so that I can go through them. I pull out what I can resell and I give you back what I can't. And then you have an ongoing trade credit and you can build that as big as you want. There is just a $50 limit per week that you can cash in on that. And that's just to help me prevent inventory holes inside the store.
And prevent. Yeah. Like I said, prevent the store like just being completely empty.
Yeah. Because of like one trade. And I do have some customers that have really big trade credits. So I just wouldn't want somebody to walk in on a Saturday morning, which is my busiest day, and go, I got $1,000 sitting there. And I'm like, no, I'm sorry. You can. So I do have to limit that. And I, you know, of course, if I get some like great sci-fi set in and you've got your heart set on it, I will talk to me, you know, you can always talk to me. I like to make exceptions for people, but yeah, especially also if I have stuff in back stock, but typically that 50 a week rule, I think is okay. And if you're reading more than 50 books a week, like I need to talk to you. I need you to teach me how to read better.
Also, where do you find that time to read 50 books in a week?
Oh gosh. I don't know. I mean, I do have some customers that come in and I start, like, how quick do you think you read? I could sit down and read a book as quick as I watch a movie. And I'm just kind of like, get out of my store. go somewhere else. But at the same time, like, no, that's exactly why. There are people that devour books. And then we go back to that affordable reading. Like somebody that can read, you know, as fast as they can watch an episode, 4 or 5 episodes of The Office, like me, you know, yeah, you need a dollar book because to feed your own soul if you're reading that fast. But yeah, where do you find the time? I don't know.
I guess something I haven't brought up yet. Where is shelf life on Front Street?
Shelf life is between, it's on the section of Front Street where all the shops are between Portage and Broad. And that's the side that has the clock tower. So the store is on the lower level of 2115 Front Street. It's in the same building as Magna Wine Bar, which is next to Asterisk Coffee, and that's next to Crave Cantina. So that's kind of starting from the clock tower heading towards Portage. On the other side is the Cauca Valley Art Center. So that's that long building or long set of buildings is the section that I'm in. And you would go in just like you're going to Magna, and they're the first door on the right. And you should definitely stop there if you enjoy wine and then keep going. And then I'm the third door on the left. And when you open, well, the door is usually open. You'll see a set of stairs. You're on the right. You're going the right way. I hear a lot of people hesitate at the top of the stairs. Like, is this right? Are we going to get in trouble for going down there? No, just keep going. Just go down the stairs. And I've got some fun little signs up now that are kind of changing out week by week that kind of indicate where you're going. And first time is the hardest. Please don't get frustrated. it's not meant to be difficult. It's just the time that I was looking for a space. This was the only thing that was available, and it's working really well. So that's where it is. Disclaimer, if you plug it into GPS, 2115 also is the address for all of the suites. And that includes some of the businesses that are on the back of the building. Google is also going to show you the back of the building. You can use that parking lot, but I'm not back there. So if you do use that parking lot, it's also free parking, whereas it's metered on Front Street. There are a set of stairs that are attached to, if you're looking at the back of the building where the yoga studio sign is, and the tattoo gallery or the tattoo studio and Fit Life Gym. If you look to the right, you'll see a set of stairs that lead you up to Front Street. You can walk up those stairs and then go left. You'll see the Magna sign hanging there. And then, you know, just rewind to the instructions on getting down there.
Having worked in the Falls, what is your favorite part of Cuyahoga Falls, either downtown or just in general?
Well, I am partial to downtown for two reasons. I grew up in the Falls and I love the river. I used to work in an office nearby and I would take my lunch breaks there. So I just feel like being that close to the river is quite something. It's quite sentimental to me. So having a store so close to the river is pretty cool. On top of the fact that Front Street, the evolution of Front Street, I've learned so many things from customers that have come in and talked about the old O'Neills and the old bakeries and pharmacies that have been there. The evolution of what's happening on Front Street, and I can only speak for me, I feel like is upholding this certain like downtown Cuyahoga Falls value, especially now that there are all of these new small businesses that are coming in. The feeling, aside from all of the tangible things that you can see and measure with, you know, they're doing really well, and you know, the social side of it and the economics, the vibe that you get when you're down there is really amazing. So I, as far as Cuyahoga Falls goes, almost, I would almost say I am a little impartial because, you know, outside of having a store there, that just being down there when I'm not at work is highly sensational. It's everyone is smiling. It's such a positive atmosphere, and you know that it's doing really well. So all of that combined, and then, you know, you're a step away from, you know, sitting on those big stone pillars by the river and just, you know, having a quiet moment. So I think the area that I'm in, definitely. But I also feel like maybe that's a little unfair to all of the other small businesses that are scattered around Cuyahoga Falls, which are equally, you know, amazing. And Cuyahoga Falls itself is a lot different than, you know, 20, 30 years ago. And in my opinion, all positive ways.
And finally, this is going to be the hardest question.
Okay.
Who is your favorite author?
Kurt Vonnegut.
Okay.
That was not a hard question. You've been down there. You see his smug smile on my wall. No, Kurt Vonnegut absolutely is my favorite author. And I feel like, were you being sarcastic just now and I missed it?
Partly.
Because my email address, yes, and we've been emailing, yes. Vonnegut, for sure. I did not read any required Vonnegut in high school. It wasn't assigned reading. I was 21 when I was handed my first copy of Slaughterhouse-Five, and that was it. I was done. It was all in for me. So the thing that's interesting about Vonnegut is my email address is Talk Vonnegut to Me, right? And a lot of that is, it sounds like I know everything about Kurt Vonnegut, which is the exact opposite of the truth. I have not read every Kurt Vonnegut novel or short story. And part of that is because this, like my assigned reading for him, I intend to be a lifelong journey. And I made a joke in an email to a local author the other day when I said I had a dream once and Kurt Vonnegut came to me and told me that I would read his books all my life. And I took that to mean that as long as I'm still reading him, I'll be alive. I'll live forever. I'm going to save that last book as long as I can. And then I said, you know, some of this is true. I did have a dream about Kurt Vonnegut, but that was not the context of the dream. I just sort of, you know, I like the idea that I may live a long, happy life as long as I'm reading him and keeping some of the stuff new. But yeah, Kurt Vonnegut.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, I actually have only read one book of his, and it was a book of essays.
Okay.
So I'm still trying to get into his work.
Okay. Well, Bart, I have actually I always have an extra copy of Slaughter. Well, I always try to have an extra copy of Slaughterhouse 5. So the next time you're in, I would love to gift you this book.
Okay.
And I would love to know what you think about it. It's an anti-war novel, for those that haven't read. It is fiction, sort of. I think some of this does recount some of his own experiences, but it's beautifully written, and it's not so serious that it's depressing or sad, which sometimes I think we do need in war novels and memoirs, to kind of get the picture of what it means to be at war, what a war actually means for everyone involved and those even on the outside. But a lot of it is very laughable. But by the end, you kind of snap into your own internal anti-war feeling, like how you feel and how you relate to conflict. This was a book that I think challenged me in thinking about fighting a lot different than I had previously thought. And it's always stuck with me. But the thing is, it's so comical. And it's so like almost it's part sci-fi. So as he would call slick fiction, but I'd be really interested to see what you think.
Yeah, I will definitely read that then.
Awesome. Awesome.
Okay. Well, Danielle, thank you for joining us this week, and we'll see everybody next week.
Thank
Bye.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Fallscast is a production of the Falls Free Press in Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio. Please check out the Falls Free Press at fallsfreepress.com or on social media at facebook.com/fallsfreepress. We thank you for listening to this episode, which was recorded and edited by Bart Sullivan. Please subscribe to our podcast and tell your Cuyahoga Falls friends and family so they can listen as well.
She likes to move it, move it. Do 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 do